We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Vikings, I didn't believe he started like a handful of games last year, but I don't really know too much about him either. And then there's also the tight ends, man. You need to have a contingency plan for Darren Waller. You don't know what he's doing. But if the Giants go into next season with Jack Stoll and Chris Manhertz as their 2 and 3 tight ends and Darren Waller's not on this roster, I'm at least comfortable enough. It's a lot better of a situation than it was last year from a blocking and from a depth standpoint. Obviously, you're going to lose Darren Waller, which is unfortunate. But Daniel Bellinger, Chris Manhertz, and Jack Stoll, that trio of tight ends, you could do a lot worse than that. And I know Giant fans are aware.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack as far as what you said and then as far as free agency goes. But I want to start with, it felt like it was a cookie cutter right out of the Nick Flotta textbook as far as you've been calling for, and I know we have both have been, but you've been calling hard for more line of scrimmage tight end type players that we can add to this roster. And we did that with 2 players. And I think it goes to what you said about building more in the trenches on the offense side of the ball, the offensive line with a lot of depth signings, including 2 potential starters like you talked about. Because these guys, Manhertz and Stoll, they can play on the line of scrimmage and they can get down in the dirty in the trenches and block. And that's something that's really important to every football team. As I go through football more, Nick, yes, I am a believer that you got to pass to win, but I am also a believer that a lot happens at the line of scrimmage. And when you start to watch, like, this is something I've picked up just over the last few years doing all 22 with you, Nick. You just see the impact that these tight ends make on the line of scrimmage. You just see the impact of trench play. It's so much of every single NFL play comes down to if you're winning or losing in the trenches. It sets up for everything. So when you can get 2 great blocking tight ends in here, and I really think they can both be great blocking tight ends for the Giants, maybe more so Manhertz, but I think Stoll can do his role as well, at least to the level of maybe what we have with Daniel Bellinger. I feel comfortable even if Waller retires. So I want to start by saying that they've hit both of what you really wanted, get those tight ends in the trenches and then get, you know, another edge rusher, which you were really keen on. And you know, I went into free agency, Nick, unsure of the direction the Giants would go. And I thought maybe it would be a total rebuild, a total revamp. They're not going to spend a lot of money and they're going to just kind of bank on the compensatory draft picks and really get this thing restarted. But Joe Shane's not going to do that. And I kind of, more I think about it, understand that, Nick, because it's very tough for a GM 2 years in to be like, all right, now let's restart this thing from pure scratch. He's going to retool. He's not going to restart. And part of that was revamping the resources. They went in with a lot of needs, safety, because of the free agency, safety with McKinney and Barkley hitting, safety, running back, corner, edge, offensive line, all across the board, essentially, tight end. Like, you can go across the list, wide receiver to some extent. Like, there were needs. And one, I like how he allocated the resource. He didn't overpay for any of these crappy free agent wide receivers like Mike Williams, $15 million is insane. Trade for Jerry Jeudy and give him like $15 million a year or whatever the Browns gave him.
More than that.
These are insane contracts that I don't want him spending on. He didn't allocate resources to a safety, which at first I was in on McKinney, but if I know I can trade out McKinney for Burns, I'm happier with Burns. Like, I would rather invest. You know, we talked about, oh, McKinney's 24 years old. He's just reaching his prime. Sure. So is Brian Burns. And yes, we lost the second round pick instead of McKinney, which we would have signed for free and kept the second round pick. But, you know, as I do this more, and 2nd and 5, but as I do this more, Nick, my approach has really changed. I used to be of the, absolute mindset, Nick, that like, I don't want to ever trade draft picks for players because I could just get the player in the draft. It's going to be a cheap contract for $2 million and all the financial side of it and the upside side of not trading those draft picks. always is great in your mind. You're always like, oh, the Giants can get this and that with the first and second round draft pick. But as I've done this longer, Nick, I'm starting to realize why so many NFL GMs have the total opposite mindset there. They really do. They believe in trading for proven players. That's why Brian Burns had a really big trade market. And that's why even after he had that trade market, despite, you know, any team understanding that if you trade for Brian Burns, you have to re-sign him to a massive league setting deal, despite the fact that the production hasn't been there, you're paying for future production. And as you start to do this more, Nick, you start to learn these draft picks don't pan out a lot. And yeah, pie in the sky, it's great to keep the pick and be like, if I get this guy, he's on a 4-year rookie controlled contract at $2 million a year against the cap. It's amazing. Why would I ever trade for Brian Burns? But then you go through and you're like, bust, 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 decent player, bust, 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 occasional big hit, not often, really at all in the second round for the Giants. I don't know the last second round pick that's been a mega hit for the Giants. Can you remember who was the last second round pick the Giants smashed out of the park? Let's try to think about this one, Nick. Because it's a good
second round pick that the Giants smashed out of the park. So I would say Xavier McKinney, but he's not even on a second. See, if Xavier McKinney doesn't count for what you're talking about,
not count at all for what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm guessing Linville Joseph wouldn't count for what you're talking about, even though those are both very high quality NFL players.
I'm talking about smash out of the park. Like, you're now an all pro player. See, that's my, because I think Brian Burns can be, or let's just say you're at the level of Brian Burns. Let's use that as the baseline, because I don't think McKinney is at the level of Brian Burns personally. I know there's some stuff that he's, but like, as far as impacting the game on a play to play basis.
Well, I think a lot of that is positional value. I think there's an edge rusher. Yeah. So edge rusher can impact the game at a much higher rate. And, I think in just, you know, reality than a safety can. But I think Xavier McKinney is a very high quality asset, but paying a safety $17 million a year right now, no, I'd much rather pay Brian Burns, but the Giants are paying Brian Burns and get that production at the edge position, which I also think will alleviate some of the burden on Kayvon Thibodeau, who we're trying to maximize and develop, and just having two edge rushers who are high draft assets with Dexter Lawrence in the middle. I mean, that's just like, that's what Shane Bowen, if you're going to transition your defense from bringing five, six men, 30%, 35, 39% of the time, I think it was last year with Wink Martindale, to a four-man pass rush where you're going to rely on twists, you're going to need to generate more pressure in one-on-one situations because you're going to be at a disadvantage sending four when there's five-man protection, six-man protection. There's going to be a lot of that. And in six-man protection, when you're going up against that, where is that run? Like, where are you helping? You're going to be helping a lot on Brian Burns, right? You might have a tight end chip. You're going to send a running back out to him. Now, Dexter Lawrence might not have as many players that he has to beat in one-on-one situations. Now, Kayvon Thibodeau is in on one-on-one. So Brian Burns takes such a burden off the other edge rushers. And that is so necessary if you want Shane Bowen's defense to be good, because Shane Bowen's defense is not going to send five and six like with Martindale's did.
Yeah, and it's going to be a whole new defense from that standpoint. And now we have we're equipped for it, the rush forward style defense, which is great, because that's typically, if you get to the NFL, if you perfect your defense, the best defense is a defense that rushes four and drops seven on a consistent basis and can get pressure by rushing four and dropping seven. It's going to give you the best chance to win. Yes, it's fun to watch Wink Martindale's defense when he's sending extra blitzers, and it's going to work sometimes, and it's going to look awesome. We have those film cutups throughout the past 2 years. If you go on our YouTube page, you can find all the cutups of Nick breaking down the film and look how good this blitz was. But then there's also the cutups of the blitz that goes wrong and the quarterback who's a fast processor like Dak Prescott just eating it up and ripping it apart. But when you only rush four and drop seven, you give yourself a much better chance. But I want to circle back to what I was saying about Brian Burns based on not only what he's already been, but what he can be in Shane Bowen's system as he transitions to his age 25 year and as he really becomes a better player. I personally would have to go back all the way to, this is for me, for what my opinion is. And you can argue Corey Webster, but I'm fine giving Corey Webster. But for me, for what I think Brian Burns can be, Nick, I'm going all the way back to the 2004 draft with Chris Snee in round two. As far as what you're getting from the round two pick the Giants have at 39 overall, that kind of impact that I think Burns is going to give them is all the way back to 2004 for me, and that's 20-year draft classes ago. And there's some bad picks in there, so you don't want to look through that whole Giants second-round draft history. But so that's kind of where I'm at with it. I used to be a very different mindset, but now I'm of the mindset of you could trade. If you trade for proven players, you're actually probably plus EV in the long run. And now some people may be like, but does it make sense to trade for a Brian Burns with where you're at as far as the roster is concerned, like the construction of the roster? And I feel like Joe Shane's looking at this thing, Nick, like I'm not going to totally rebuild this thing down. I have a lot of core pieces I like already. Kayvon Dexter, Andrew Thomas, Wandale Hyatt, and a few other players that he probably really likes. Deonte Banks, like guys that, and there's probably others that he really likes that we don't know about. Like, he probably loves the tape of a Daniel Bellinger type, in my opinion. And he's like, that's another core piece, and other players of that regard. And so he's looking at it at like, and I'm not sure the direction yet at quarterback, obviously, Nick, that's going to determine this, but I don't think he's looking at this thing like they're not going to be able to compete anytime soon. And you know what? I credit him for that, because a lot of Giants fans online and on Twitter are like, we are so far away, we're never going to compete. And I just laugh because I remember how bad things were in Houston before CJ Stroud. And I remember how really bad things were in Cincinnati before Burrow. And I mean, really bad, that roster, that owner, and everything around that Bengals franchise before Joe Burrow. So I like that Shane's not just like, I need to really just take every, you know, nail off this thing and just totally take it down to the foundation here. He's not doing that. And I was personally happy with that, because it gives me hope that they can compete soon if they can upgrade the quarterback position.
Joe Shane is certainly trying to do a quicker rebuild, quote unquote. I mean, you have players like Bobby Okereke, who are core players on your defense, that are on a contract for what, another 2 seasons? Like, you don't want that to just be wasted. We've seen this coaching staff and this general manager, this regime, maybe I should say, turn around a team that no one thought was going to win. And now you need to do something at the quarterback position. We don't know if they're going to draft a quarterback. They could. But you also need what? A wide receiver one. You need some other pieces. But adding Brian Burns, who now you have under contract for what, the next 5 years at 25 years old, that's something that you have to do. And this is a strategy that Joe Shane has now showed, Dan, 2 years in a row, where he went out, he identified a need in a year where I think they were realistically believing that they could compete for a Super Bowl because of the strides that they made in year one, and they added Darren Waller and they brought him in. They saw what Daniel Jones did in the first year of Brian Daboll's system. Need to get him an alpha wide receiver. Couldn't get an alpha wide receiver. Let's get him an alpha tight end, an alpha receiving threat. So they did that. This is a little bit different. This also, because Darren Waller is somebody who had injury issues. We knew that going into it. It was a part of the deal, and it manifested in year one, but he's older. Brian Burns is not older. So this is a long-term play, but it also doesn't take away from the short-term. If the Giants are so inclined to get a quarterback in this upcoming draft, whether it be a Drake May, a JJ McCarthy, a Jaden Daniels, you want a good defense that can really help that quarterback. And Brian Burns can help that in the immediate, but he's also here for the next 5 years on what's going to be a team-friendly contract by the end of that, if he produces like he did in Carolina. And I think Joe Shane at least has it in his mind, Dan, he's going to produce a little bit more than he did in Carolina.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think in his mind, he's looking at it like, we may have just built one of the best defensive lines in the NFL. And I don't think that's any kind of stretch with Dexter Lawrence on any defensive line. But then you also have Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau to add to that mix. Plus a couple of players we kind of like in their development. DJ Davidson, obviously, a few players. And I mean, we're not going to go crazy over the two trench guys that are behind them, the late round picks, but they showed flashes. You know, in his mind, I think he's looking at it like, we might have an elite defensive line. And for Shane Bowen's system, an elite defensive line could allow us to have a very, very strong defense. Look, Shane Bowen's already had one of the best defenses in the NFL with the Titans. And when they were in 2021, when Ryan Tannehill and that team was the number one seed in the conference. And that's a number one seed with Ryan Tannehill is nothing to scoff at. Like, it's not easy to get a number one seed with a mid-level quarterback. It doesn't happen all the time. It's very rare. You see that happening these days. So I think he views it as that, and that gives them a chance to compete. And then on the flip side of the ball, Nick, he put a lot of resources. Yeah, they didn't go out and get the top guys of the market, but he put a lot of resources into the trenches with 4 offensive linemen. We've always said throughout the entirety of this podcast, we want to keep adding depth on the offensive line, you and I, Nick. We just want to keep signing players. We're not worried about the excess. The excess is never an issue. Like, it's been the opposite. We have to worry about not, like, there's been no time when we've covered this team, whereas I've been in the fan, where I'm like, no, we have too many offensive linemen. We're in trouble. We got to cut someone and eat the cap because we just have too many good offensive linemen. It never works out like that. It's been the total opposite. So adding depth, not just for injuries, but for underperforming players potentially that you need to replace and you need to have an option to replace. He did that in addition to adding those 2 tight ends. And I view it as him seeing that he can turn this offense around a lot quicker than people think if they can get the offensive line play up to par. Because if they can get the offensive line play up to par and Daniel Jones is able to come back healthy, Daniel Jones has already produced in 2022. I know that there are concerns with the fact that in 2022, the offense was very limited in the sense that it was essentially look at your first read. If it's not there, run through the B gap, Jones. And he did a lot of those runs and he got a lot massive EPA on those scrambles. But Jones and yes, defenses took that away last year, but we didn't get a full sample size to see if Jones could adjust to defenses taking it away last year because Jones got hurt last year and the offensive line collapsed. And I want to give Jones the benefit of the doubt from that standpoint, Nick. And I also want to say in 2022, he made some really big time throws that we discussed on this podcast, big third down conversions with his arm, not just with his legs, middle of the field. I don't think Jones used the outside numbers that well, but middle of the field, he made a lot of those big time throws, the throws that are NFL throws, because most of the time, as we discussed in the last podcast, and thank you all to who tuned in and listened, we got some great numbers on that with Trevor Sikkema. In the NFL, the middle of the field is what's actually an opportunity for the quarterbacks the most part because the outside started third. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, Nick. And I want to say that Joe Shane believes that there's at least a chance in his mind that if they can fix this offensive line with an elite defensive line that could lead to an elite defense because defensive line is so important for a Shane Bowen system, as we discussed, that they can get back to winning football right away in 2024. I don't think it's impossible. I really don't. Now, I would say, Nick, that unless Jones takes like a massive jump as a quarterback, he should and will have to agree to a massive pay cut if he's going to stay in 2020. If they have a good season with Jones and it's similar to 2022, like almost identical to that, Nick, I would think and I would hope that Joe Shane comes to his camp and says, you need to take a pay cut because we can get out of this contract right now or you take a pay cut. And if not, you also waive that injury guarantee. Because at that point, the Giants have to understand the leverage they have. You send Jones to the market, no one's paying $40 million a year or $50 million a year for this dude. No one was going to do it in the first place. No one's going to do it now after the injuries, the neck, the two neck and the ACL. So I still think there's an opportunity for Jones to even be the franchise QB. I know it's crazy to sounds like now, Nick, but if they don't feel like they have that person in this class and then next year they win football games with Jones, which I think is possible based on what we've discussed, what they've added to this team in free agency, that's when you turn the page. And as long as he takes a massive pay cut, I'm okay with it. What I'm not okay with is paying him $50 million a year, or $40 million a year. And the Giants aren't okay with it either because they allocated all the cap space to Burns. They don't have the cap space anymore to pay a Daniel Jones or any quarterback, really, at this point.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's going on, Big Blue Banter listeners? I'm excited for the football season for several reasons. And one of those reasons is Prize Picks, which is North America's largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform. And it's so simple to use. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including professionals, sharks, and people who are going to exploit you, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections, and you just watch the winnings roll in. It's very simple to play and gives you a little extra skin. I've set my picks in less than 60 seconds. There are so many stats to choose from, and the withdrawals of funds are easy and quick. Dan and I will be adding a segment to our show before every game where we pick our favorite stats, more or less yards or touchdowns, what have you, and we'll be discussing why from a scheme, matchup, and game theory perspective. I love their promotions and how easy their interface is to operate at Prize Picks. I may select more on tackles for a loss from Bobby Okereke or Kayvon Thibodeau next game. They also do other sports as well. It's a really cool experience. Please join Dan and I in the fun of Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit matchup to $100. You will not regret it. You ever feel sluggish or out of focus? Are you stressed? Has your digestive system caused discomfort or flatulence like a certain co-host on this podcast during a live stream? If so, you should check out AG1. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I was better off at the gym, and I could focus on my work in a much more efficient manner. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I recommend AG1 to all my family and friends because AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists that formulate around the latest science and maintains high quality standards within the industry. Even my friends have started drinking AG1, and they always tell me how energetic they feel and how it's helped them out at the gym, and also it's helped them manage their stress levels. That's why we're happy to have AG1 as our partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and five free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/banter. That's drinkag1.com/banter to check it out.
Yeah, sometimes you need to just go with your best option. And that could be Daniel Jones. And I don't think that is a great situation, specifically if he doesn't take the jump that we've all been waiting for what now, six seasons. So it seems a little bit unrealistic, but unless the Giants are going to tear it all down, which some of the moves that they made right now does not suggest that's what Joe Shane is going to do.
Right.
I think the Giants are going to do their due diligence and do serious look into the quarterback. They're picking at six. You're in realistic striking distance to trade up if one of those other teams will trade with you. Obviously, it takes two to tango. But again, man, if you don't love them, I don't want them to force it like the Giants might have done in 2019 when they selected Daniel Jones. Now, I think Dave Gettleman really did believe that he was getting his guy, but I don't know if Joe Shane would have believed that with Daniel Jones, right? Those are two completely different types of general managers. So it's interesting. I love the investments, man. I like the addition, going back to the offensive line, of Jermaine Illuminor specifically. I like John Runyon because he gives you the flexibility to play at either guard, and I think John Runyon is a capable player. Jermaine Illuminor can be an answer at right tackle if Evan Neal does not develop. And if Evan Neal needs to be kicked inside, Evan Neal has experience playing inside at Alabama at both. No, I think it was only one of the guard spots, if I'm not mistaken. But Evan Neal has played all along the offensive line, and he might need a change of scenery. He could just use Carmen Brasillo, and maybe Carmen Brasillo can unlock the potential that he had when he was coming out of Alabama. Regardless, you have an actual answer at right tackle now. That's not just Tyree Phillips. That's not Matt Parrott. That's not Josh Azudu on the left side. Like, you have a true player who can play left tackle, right tackle, or start at right guard and maybe stabilize the right side of the offensive line with Evan Neal at right tackle to start and John Michael Schmitz at center in Jermaine Illuminor, who, if you watched any of the interviews with him, this dude has an infectious, uplifting type of personality. And that could go a long way, right? Having that type of veteran presence on the offensive line. So I love those investments. Again, I don't have much on the two depth pieces on the offensive line, but as you said before, man, just keep kicking it, bringing in people to compete. And that's what we want. And if some draft picks, you know, day three draft picks from a couple of years ago don't make the roster because they don't beat out an Austin Schleitman, good for the New York Giants, right? Or an Aaron Stinney. And then the Drew Lock addition. That's another signing that the Giants made that I'm okay with, man. I think Drew Lock has some potential. We know who Drew Lock is. We broke him down a couple episodes ago. He's going to make some dumb mistakes, but he has a freaking cannon, right? He has a cannon, and he's only 27 years old, and I think he could be a solid backup quarterback and a potential starting quarterback if Daniel Jones is not ready for a couple games that maybe he could squeak out a win or two. But that's kind of the I think the Giants did a really good job in this offseason with what they had and the position that they were put in. They also added Isaiah McKenzie, Jalen Mills, and Darnay Holmes. Darnay Holmes and Jalen Mills to the secondary. Isaiah McKenzie, familiar face, special team or slot wide receiver.
Yeah, and I think just going back to what you were saying, Nick, about what they were able to accomplish, they were never going to be, like, some people were like, oh, why didn't they go out and sign Owenu or any of these big time guards in free agency? I wanted to pen the highest guard, Robert Hunt, but they were never going to be able to do that. Plus get Brian Burns and plus get depth on the offensive line. Like these things are not, we don't have La La Land level of, you know, salary cap space. So I kind of feel like something that might've been more important, Nick, is actually having a real solution and plan if Evan Neal sucks again. Because look, if Evan Neal sucks again, you can't just have no right tackle out there. And I know, you know, he's been overrated a lot by Giants fans who are trying to make a point about the Tyrod Taylor versus Daniel Jones stuff. As far as I always blank on his name and I got it wrong last podcast. I don't know, Tyree Phillips, as far as Tyree Phillips goes, but Tyree Phillips is not going to play at the same level. Tyree Phillips was not good on film last year. Let me just be point blank. He was backed up in the quarterback. I watched him just completely get displaced on so many snaps. That was not good film, and he was not good in the run game. That was not good. Was he better than Neal to some extent? I guess, mostly because Neal just has those horrible highlight plays that everybody puts on Twitter and is like, look how bad he was here. But like, if you go snap by snap, I don't think he was really that much better, if at all, than Evan Neal, especially when you consider the run game. But, you know, now you have an actual legit option in Luminor if Neal sucks. Like, you can put someone in who's played starter snaps and played a lot better than most people realize. And that, to me, was almost more important than anything, Nick, because yeah, guard play is very important, Nick, and the integrity of the interior offensive line is obviously important as well, but you can't have no right tackle out there. Like, you need to have a capable starter out there. So I feel like that was one of his second biggest, if one of the biggest accomplishments he made in free agency.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. Never going to hear us complain about investing in the offensive line, especially if it is savvy vets that can stabilize some of the young guys who are not developing,
yeah,
who did not develop.
And to add to your point before, I do think it's interesting to bring in a Drew Lock type who may be able to interpret this system differently than he's interpreted others. Brian Daboll's going to get his hands on him and try to mold him. And as far as the Daniel Jones thing goes, I think, like, I agree with you that he needs to take a big jump to be considered the future of this franchise at this point. And I think, obviously, the concerns with the neck are probably really what's holding the most weight right now, if I was guessing, because, you know, Ralph Acciano came out with an article today, Nick, and you know how Ralph Acciano articles go. They're very, let's just say, team leaning. I'll leave it at that. Because you can see, you can look back at his history and pretty much everything is very positive, rosy, team leaving, like the Galladay sign somebody circulated today and all those things. But you know, when he comes out with an article and he says the Giants aren't concerned at all with how Daniel Jones is playing, but they're really concerned with the injuries, with the two neck injuries. That's a sign to me that there are actual concerns about the injuries, because that wouldn't leak from Bacchiano, somebody like him, if that wasn't a real deal type of thing. And so I find that to be incredibly interesting. And so ultimately, maybe what I'm saying, like Daniel Jones having the chance to bounce back, which I really do believe on the field he can, Nick, like there's an opportunity right now, given the signings they've made and the draft picks they've made recently, to give Daniel Jones the best situation he's had in his entire career this year. He really is. If that offensive line stabilizes with all these signings, you have Hyatt, you have Wandale, and in addition to, you know, and you could say, oh, he doesn't have Barkley, and that is a negative. But those guys, and it really is. But I really think if they stabilize this offensive line, man, with the receivers they have, plus obviously then at that point, if you miss on quarterback in the draft, you give him a Malik Nabers or you give him a Roma Dunze, right? You're giving him the best situation of his career. I think there's a chance he can put together another 9-8 season like he did in 2022. He's probably not going to get the benefit of facing like an Ed Donatell Vikings defense in the playoffs, but you know, you get to 9-8, there might be an opportunity for him to take in my opinion, you would have to restructure that contract. There's no way he's worth $50 million a year against the cap going into 2025. But you restructure the contract, you remove the injury guarantee. I don't think it's the worst possible scenario for the Giants. I think it's actually in play if they miss on quarterback in this draft.
It's certainly in play if they miss on quarterback in this draft. I don't know if it's a great situation in general. You need to, and I know you understand this, Dan.
Yeah.
Create some damn explosive plays. You're not winning in the NFL if you don't create explosive plays. It's just that simple.
And so Daniel Jones he's somehow never been able to do.
No, and he is very reluctant to throw the football more than 20 yards down the field. And he's much more of somebody who's looking from 5 yards close to the line of scrimmage, go to the first read and then bail off that. So those are some issues that date back to his time in Duke, frankly. So 100%. They're persisting. And I don't know if it's just going to click as he's rehabbing through an ACL injury. But to your point, yes, he will have a better infrastructure around him that I believe can be maximized, unlike a lot of his early years where the offensive line was an issue and the weapons weren't necessarily there. Because we're going into year 3 now with Wandale Robinson, year 2 [S2] Right. with Jalin Hyatt. And I think both of those guys are talented. Neither of them are 1As. I don't consider Darius Slayton a 1A, but he has a rapport with Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton is productive and he is a deep threat. I wish he was utilized a little bit more in that area, of course. But if you do add Udunze and if you do add Malik Nabers, that can help you unlock a different aspect that Daniel Jones really never has, specifically with Nabers. Because Udunze, too, like from what I understand about Rome Udunze, he's a 50-50 guy, but you need that quarterback to throw the 50-50 ball. So you need him to do that. And that doesn't mean that he's not fluid, because Udunze, for his size, he's big and he is fluid, but he does really well in those 50-50 situations. Nabers, that is an Odell Beckham Jr., and I'm not just saying that because of the LSU comps, but that is the type of receiver that you hit on a slant, he breaks the angle of the safety, and he's gone. And that makes your stats look a lot better than, I'm averaging 190 passing yards a game, because that's like a 70. That's what Nabers can do for you. And Nabers, from what I understand, from what I, the little bit I have seen, damn good route runner too. So there's that too. So I'm excited to see. I don't want to sit here and act like I'd be excited if Daniel Jones was the quarterback. To me, he has so much to prove. And I think you're right there with me. But there have been worse situations for teams in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at like where they're at with this, because they've obviously put resources into the team for now. We know that, right? Like all the moves they made, the Brian Burns trade especially, that says it all. And there's obviously the other side of it, Nick, where the Brian Burns trade says the opposite too. The Brian Burns trade could tell you, and I still think this is much more likely, by the way. The Brian Burns trade tells you, oh, they traded for Brian Burns. They gave him $150 million against the cap. That means they view the quarterback cap going way down for this franchise starting in 2025. And that's probably what's going to happen, right? Yeah. They get rid of Jones and they free up all that cap space. And some of that cap space goes to Brian Burns. A lot of it goes to Brian Burns. And that's most likely what's going to happen. But, I just think there's this scenario where Jones plays good enough with how much they put around him. Brasil brings that line up to, and that's still a big projection, right? We don't know if the offensive line is going to be the best of Jalin Jones's career. We're hoping it's going to be the best offensive line he's had.
What was the best offensive line that Daniel Jones has had?
I guess 2018-19, I guess.
I
think 2022. I think 2022. Yeah. I don't think the 2022 line was that bad. I know it probably didn't grade well.
John Feliciano, Andrew
just
Thomas.
On tape, they weren't like getting beat every fight. Like they were fine on tape. There was enough time on tape in my opinion.
The right side was a big issue.
Yeah, the right side still sucked. But like that wasn't historically bad, and it was probably that year, maybe 2019. But it's still projection to say this will be the best line of Jones's career. But with that said, it's possible. And I just see there's potential scenario. But to me, it would require the Giants understanding their leverage here. That's what they didn't do last year with Daniel Jones. They did not understand their leverage versus the league. There is no market for Daniel Jones. Nothing. There's no $50 million market. There's no $40 million market. You got to cut it. You'd have to tell him to agree to a pay cut, a massive, massive pay cut. And you could stay as a starter. And if not, go ahead, hit the free agent market. You'll probably be coming back to us for a QB2 job at that point. Because I'll tell you what, after this season, unless Jones takes a massive jump, Nick, and starts to actually throw for like 4,235 TDs, like that's what it would need to be, a 4,200 passing season with 35 passing touchdowns to really change anyone's mind. It would. To change anyone's mind, why would anyone else give him $50 million against the cap or $40 million against the cap if he's not going to throw for 4,235 for once? Like there's just no point at that point. He's coming off an ACL. The running's only going to go downhill at this point in his career. Can't go up. So he has to become a passer in the NFL, an actual real live passer. You mentioned the Duke stuff, dude, but the Duke stuff's true. You know, he was 117th his last year in Duke in average depth of target. How crazy is that? This has been who he is his entire life. Everyone's like, the Giants failed Jones. The Giants ruined Jones. No, this is what Jones is. He was that at Duke, and he's that now. He can still become something different. This is the last chance, but that's my point. He has to become a real passer. And if Nabers joins the team, maybe that's what does it. But that's the only way I think he can keep the current contract with the Giants. But I think even that would be a mistake. But you got to understand your leverage. No, the league doesn't view Jones the way you view Jones. And I think finally the Giants are starting to understand that. But I really think the Vacchiano thing is what stands out the most with what he said about the injury stuff. That means there's real concerns within the organization about the neck injury, the two neck injuries. But let's move a little past Jones here, Nick, and let's talk about what the Giants did on the offensive line and where that sets them up for the draft, Nick. So in your opinion, given what they've done on the offensive line in free agency, where do you think their plan is going to be going into this draft? And I ask you that, and let me frame the question this way. Do you think they're going to be looking at offensive line as priority? Do you think they're going to be looking at it as, eh, if the right value falls, we're going to take it? Or do you think they're going to be looking at it like we've seen in the past, like with Gettleman years, the Tony year, for example, of we're not taking an offensive line high no matter what?
I don't think Joshane operates like that final point. So I think it's going to be the second point.
Thank God.
If the value falls to us, we're going to select an offensive lineman that we love if there's not another position that we value at the similar time. What are you smiling at?
I was going to ask you a trivia question, and we could. I don't want you to lose your point, though.
No, my point is, I just don't believe Joshane is going to be like, we're not drafting this position no matter what. Like, that's not necessarily something, right? Now, if you were to say high, you know, what's high? The first round, second round, maybe there would be something like that. But even if like something crazy happened and somebody fell, you would have to really evaluate every situation. And I think you would at least not remove it from your board. I don't envision the Giants necessarily taking an offensive lineman at with their first round pick at six, obviously, and then at 47. I don't necessarily envision that. I wouldn't be blown away if it happens at 47. If someone falls, we know this is a very deep tackle class. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I think if you look at the Giants roster right now, there are some positions that really need an infusion of talent, to say the least. I think this team desperately needs a wide receiver one. They haven't had a wide receiver one since Odell Beckham Jr. was traded. It's been that long. And I think they also need some cornerback depth. Yes, you just re-signed Darnay Holmes. I get it. But that's just depth, and that's special team depth, baby. You need, I think, a starting cornerback. Who's a starting cornerback opposite of Deontay Banks right now? Nick McCloud, you're going to give another shot to Trey Hawkins. It's Jalen Mills. Are you going to put him there? Or is he going to play safety, third safety, box, linebacker, or whatever they want to use Jalen Mills? So you need another cornerback. That's a big need, bro. And there's some really damn good cornerbacks in this draft class. That would be my... I don't think it would be a surprising pick at six. I think it would be like a trade down and maybe they would select something. But if we're talking about the sixth overall pick, where I'm at right now, I've said this on previous podcasts, so I don't mean to be redundant, but I'm going to be. It's either you're either trading up for quarterback, you're selecting a quarterback that falls to you at six, or you're going with either Odunze or Neighbors. And I think that's where the New York Giants are. And this is a unique position because we didn't have this luxury last year. Last year, the Giants were picking so damn deep at 25 where we were like, I have no idea where the New York Giants are going to go. We thought it was going to be cornerback because we hoped that a Deontay Banks specifically would be the cornerback that would fall because Witherspoon wasn't going to fall. Gonzalez more than likely wasn't going to fall. He fell further than we thought. And then Banks was sitting there and the Giants traded up one pick and selected Banks. Right now, though, seeing how the draft is shaping up, it could be quarterbacks and wide receivers as like the first five or six picks.
I know.
Kind of crazy.
I think it is going to be. I think it could be. I think it is going to be.
Yeah, a lot of crazy stuff could happen. And
Joel's a great prospect, too. Don't get me wrong. But yeah. I still think that's what the first five or six picks is going to be. I was like, the Chargers, I'm going to do. Dude, the Chargers let Keenan Allen, Mike Williams go. This is going to be a wide receiver. Unfortunately, for the Giants, like, and this kind of sucks. I like Rome Odunze, Nick, but I like Neighbors more. Neighbors is my wide receiver, too. And I've watched enough now of Odunze to say he's closer than people realize to that level of those big two. But just for what I look for in a receiver, Neighbors is my exact type of receiver. So I'm just going to have him too. And, you know, and it's going to end up being that stupid Chiefs game where they benched all their starters and somehow the Chargers couldn't beat them. Everyone's like, don't worry about this. The Giants won. The Chargers lost. We're going to 5-6. Who cares? Well, it might end up mattering. It's just all this stuff ends up mattering at some point. You really want the picks. Like, just remember this. We want draft position. It's a very absolute thing, but, you know, it doesn't always work out that way. But I will say this, Nick, there's one more scenario that could happen in the draft. You pose the three scenarios that are most likely. But I do think one more scenario, the Giants trading down is a possibility as well. That's the fourth scenario. If, you know, the first three picks go with the big three quarterbacks that we expect, right? And let's say the fourth pick is Harrison and the fifth pick, the Chargers is like, no, we want Neighbors. That's it. We're not going to trade down. We don't want to risk not getting him. Giants sitting on the board at six and someone wants to come up for J.J. McCarthy at that point. If Giants don't believe in J.J. McCarthy, I'm not sure where they're going to be at on that. And if they do believe he's worth the pick, but if the Giants aren't going J.J. McCarthy at that point, they might be willing to pick up 11 and pick up 23 from the Vikings and maybe more at that point. Because now you're talking Godfather type offers. Depends. There's another team interested in McCarthy at that point, the Broncos, whoever it may be. Now the Vikings have to give up more. And now you're the Giants. You're getting pick 11. You're getting pick 23. And you might get something else next year. At 11, you're not going to get Odunze. You're not going to get Neighbors. You're not going to get Harrison. But you get Brian Thomas Jr. maybe. Or you could get Brock Bowers, maybe. I don't want to go that route, but you could get Brian Thomas Jr. You could get another one of these receivers, potentially.
You can get or the top corner in the draft.
Get the top corner in the class. Whoever and now you also pick 23 overall. We can get A.D. Mitchell. You can get somebody like that. Or who knows who's going to fall at wide receiver to 23. So now you got great corner, great receiver, and you pick up a future draft pick from the Vikings. all at the cost of Romo Dunze or Malik Nabers or J.J. McCarthy, obviously, if you don't believe in him. So that's the fourth scenario, and it's very intriguing to me if it's with the Vikings. I'm not as intrigued by that scenario, Nick, if it's with another team where they have to go further down in the draft and they're not getting another thing for this year. They're just getting something next year and blah, blah, blah. But if it's a team that's like the Vikings who seem very desperate to move up for quarterback, that's when I start to get interested, because if you're going to get like, there's a chance, Nick, and I just saw a rumor about this last night. There's a chance that someone's like, well, if what I'm hearing is true about what the Vikings have offered, throw out all your trade value charts, like that type of trade. Like if the Vikings are just going to be like, I don't give a F about what's value right now. I just want my guy. I'm willing to go above the chart and just pound assets your way. Just throw assets your way. You know what? At that point, pound assets. Yeah, exactly.
Assets.
I knew that didn't sound good. I was just like, fire assets away at you. And you know what? At that point, that becomes a very interesting thing for the Giants too. We're going to have a conversation about that, a long conversation about trades, trade up versus trade down, and what to do in the draft another time. But I wanted to put that out there. All right, Nick, we'll end it with this. I teased it a little bit earlier, but a little bit of a trivia question. Today, March 20th, is the 3-year anniversary of what?
So 2021, we're talking about?
Yeah, 3-year anniversary. March 20th. I was in Las Vegas for this.
You were in Vegas for this in 2021.
A hint is saxophone.
Oh, Kenny G?
Oh, yeah. It's the 3-year anniversary of Dave Gettleman getting on the horn. And you know what? We celebrated this, Nick. We were wrong. We were just excited at the time. We wanted talent. We were so wrong about this one. And then, by the way, at the time, you could say we were wrong, but we didn't have access to the hip. Like the x-rays from the hip surgery. We didn't even really know about the hip surgery at that point, after being a major surgery. But this is the 3-year anniversary of Dave Gettleman outbidding himself. He got in a bidding war with himself. No one else was offering a multi-year contract. Not a single team. The Bears brought him in for a visit and then said, all right, we'll give you a 1-year prove-it deal. No one else even brought him in for a visit. But the Giants, who said, we're going to outbid ourselves here, baby. Your agent, whatever you want, baby. I'm Davey G. Here you go. $72 million contract. No one's offering more than 1 year. No one's bringing you in for visits. Everyone's seeing this hip surgery for a skill position player getting hip surgery. Are you kidding me? A wide receiver who relies on his suddenness and explosiveness off the line of scrimmage to win is getting hip surgery, and you're going to re-sign him for 72. You're going to sign him for $72 million, but he did. And Kenny Golladay, one of the worst contracts, just a horrific contract. The Giants were, you know, I reported this on the podcast that I got from a source, but the Giants were the team that had the they did it in the New York hospital. They saw the x-rays and they told him he'll never be the same. And it was right. Kenny Golladay was never the same after that hip surgery. And the Giants just dumped dead cap into that position and that player. A horrific signing from the standpoint of you signed him after a hip surgery where he's never going to be the same for a skill position player. That's one side of it's bad enough. But even worse is bidding against yourself there with no other known interest on the free agent market and just dumping it in there like Dave did. So it's a 3-year anniversary. Hopefully we don't have another signing like that for a while, though. People in my replies were quick to say, Nick, didn't we just do that last offseason with Daniel Jones? And I was like, ah, shit.
What a disaster.
It was a 2-year out for that one, at least.
Not even just with Kenny Golladay, but you also drafted Kadarius Toney that offseason.
Oh, like, just what a offseason for the guy. And signed Kyle Rudolph that offseason. Remember that?
Yeah.
Signed Kyle Rudolph to a multi-year deal with guaranteed money. Then Kyle Rudolph said, I have Liz Frank injury. I need surgery on my foot. And he's like, do you remember this? Dave's like,
yeah, of course.
We're the Giants. We're a great organization. We honor contracts. Wait, Dave, you just got new information that he has Liz Frank and he needs surgery. No. We're the Giants. We honor contracts here. That's what we do. All right, Dave, we're going to do it. We're going to do it live. That was also the offseason where they, to do all this, to have the space to sign Rudolph and Golladay, they had cut Kevin Zeitler, who's had 3 good years since. This is as bad as a management as you could possibly have. Literally getting everything wrong. Bang, bang, bang. Rudolph, Golladay, cut Zeitler, and draft Kadarius Toney. Those four moves are just like the nut low of horrible, horrible management.
So, we don't win the Saints game without it.
Yeah, you're right.
The Saints game holds a place in my heart too. The Saints game was the last game before I flew to Cleveland, or actually flew to Chicago
and then
flew
Phoenix.
To Cleveland to go get my bulldog when he was a 10-week-old puppy. And then I returned. And I didn't sleep for 2 or 2.5 days and I returned and it was the freaking Los Angeles Rams.
Sleep for 2.5 days.
Cause I had this little 10 week old puppy who was nervous as hell. And I was And I was just like, Jesus, is he okay? Like I had no freaking idea. Yeah. It was my first time ever owning a dog. And I also like had to be at the airport, which was 2 hours north in Cleveland from where I was in Ohio at 5:30 in the morning. So it was just like this whole process.
A lot of shit. Yeah.
Returned and Thursday Night Football, Russell Wilson broke his finger. With Aaron Donald rushing. I had Russell Wilson fantasy. That's why I remember. And Russell Wilson has never been the same since then.
Yeah. Crazy. I do remember you texting me about that from that game. I don't remember. For some reason, I remember you texting. We were texting about the game. I think you had a fantasy. Something. With
Russ was my second quarterback in a two-quarterback league. I ended up winning that year, though.
Yes.
Despite Russ.
That's why I remember it. But, I had to bring it up. It's 3-year anniversary of that. And, you know, he lives rent-free in my head, old Dave. But that's how we'll end this one. Hope you enjoyed this. We basically an overview of the Giants free agency. We said we're going to talk about how it sets up in the draft. We're going to do that on the next pod. We're going to talk about the biggest needs heading into the draft for the Giants. So stay tuned, keep it locked and loaded, and have a great rest of your week.